Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast, and to our end of season Forest Ramble discussion show. I'm your host, Rich Ferraro, and in this podcast, we're going to talk about the player of the season, the goal of the season, and the best moment of the season, and so much more. We're going to have more about Stevie Cooper and why he is so damn good. We're going to hear from the Forest supporter who's an ambassador for her game too. All this and more, and we're joined once again by Jeremy Davis with the 1865 sketch. We hear from friend of the podcast, City Ground Stadium announcer Mark Dennison, and we have the return of our old faithful quiz, Guess That Red. All coming up in this episode of 1865, the Nottingham Forest Premier League podcast. Now let's say hello to today's panel, and I want you to tell me your favourite moment of the season. So I'm going to start off with Old Faithful, Baz, how are you doing?
Hiya, I'm all right. Best moment of the season for me was pretty much the entire second half at the end of the season at Arsenal, but especially at the final whistle.
Cool. And listeners, you can go back and listen to Baz's reflections on that in our match report, which is in this feed. I'm going to say hello to Stephen Topliss.
Hello. My favourite moment of the season is probably away at Leicester, the chance for Steve Cooper when we're 3-0 down and the fans show their support for Cooper. I was in amongst it as well, and it was like nothing I've experienced before to be so out of the game as we were, but the fans were constantly singing Cooper's name in that second half for a good 20 minutes. It was incredible, and I think it was a key moment because I think that played a part in Cooper keeping his job.
Yeah, potentially season-defining stuff there. And as I said in the intro, we're going to talk about that a little bit more. A little bit later on. And last but not least for this morning, good morning, Tom Newton.
Good morning. So my favourite part of this season, if you asked me the middle of last week before the Crystal Palace game, I would have said the Arsenal game, which secured our Premier League status for next season. But having gone to South London last Sunday and been in the middle of the crowd singing Waka Waka, walking through London Bridge Station with all the tourists that filming is in awe of us, I'm going to say Crystal Palace away, because to go to a Premier League game this season, especially away from home with no pressure, it was absolutely brilliant.
It made it a joy for me trying to edit in the footage that you'd taken of the of the fans singing the song, but also we're not supposed to have swearing on this podcast. So I had to be a bit careful with the editing there, but it was quite a special song and a really special way of finishing off the season. Yeah, Baz.
Just to add in, I went to my office, which is in Leeds, yesterday to sort a few bits and pieces out. And out the window, I could hear a load of people singing the Waka Waka song as well. So it's spreading.
And it's been
continuously. What?
The forest version?
Yeah, the forest version.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
Did you look further down the street and see Sam Allardyce sobbing in his beer?
In his pint of wine?
Yes.
Exactly. Pint of wine.
Okay, let's move on. We're going to hear from some of our other podcast team a little bit later on, but we're going to have a think about what's happening at the City Ground. And the big news, obviously, since the season ended, has been the fact that the club have confirmed their retained list.
Hi, it's Callum with the 1865 News. We had the retained list released the other day, so we've discovered that 12 players will be leaving the club after the expiration of their contracts. So we are saying goodbye to Andre Ayew, Cafu, Jack Colback, Billy Fuster, Alex Gibson-Hammond, Ryan Hammond, Nicky Hogarth, Adnan Kanuric, Jesse Lingard, Lewis Salmon, Jordan Smith and Lyle Taylor. But we did find out that Serge Aurier has had his contract extended for another year, so he'll be a part of the squad next season, which is great news. We've had some news that Forest are looking to offload Jonjo Shelvey this summer after the alleged arguments with Steve Cooper, and it sounds like Shelvey's keen to leave himself for some more playing time, so they'll be looking for suitors for him. We've heard similar about Emmanuel Dennis again, that he may be up for available for transfer. Remo Fraler, he's been called up to the Switzerland squad, and the last kind of bit is that Forest is still looking at Renan Lodi and Dean Henderson. I think Dean Henderson's looking more likely at the moment, with David De Gea signing a new contract for Man United, but obviously the price tag is a bit steep, so they may be working on that. And we know that Renan Lodi, Forest are trying to get that price tag down a bit as well, but there will be competition for that, and he may be looking to try and get into a club that will be playing European football, but hopefully Forest can get something sorted out. But yeah, thank you, and I'll be back with the news soon.
Panel, any surprises with the retained list, and how different do you think our squad will look by the start of the new season? Stephen, I'm going to start with you.
No surprises with the retained list, as far as I'm concerned. I think the players who are leaving, some have served Forest longer and better than others. Jack Colback, for example, it's a shame that he's leaving, but really at his age and given the injury trouble he's had this season, it's the right time to let him go, and we thank him for his service and the role that he played in getting Forest where they are now. So I think he'll always be looked back on fondly by Forest supporters, and it's a shame it didn't work out for Jesse Lingard. I really wanted it to, but to come in on a free transfer, as he did, wasn't really too much of a risk. Because if we were going down now, he'd be leaving the club as well. So, you know, it's not worked out for a year's contract, but by all accounts, he's played a big role in the dressing room as a cheerleader when he's not been fit to play. And that's an important role he's played for us this season. And yeah, it's a shame it's not worked out for him on the pitch. Jordan Smith, Lyle Taylor, again, not really surprised with those two. I think they'll get picked up by championship clubs. And from the loan period, from the loan point of view, hopefully we're going to re-sign Henderson. Navas, I think, will get picked up by a team in Europe somewhere. And it would be nice to keep hold of Renan Lodi, but I think it might be family issues that might prevent that from happening. But all in all, I think the squad is going to look similar to what it is now, but with a couple of additions over the summer. Nowhere near the amount of movement that we had last year.
Tom, with Renan Lodi, we all saw him in tears at the end, and we saw his Instagram post about how it's been a really emotional season for him. You know, he moved to Forest with the hope of getting in the World Cup squad, and it didn't work out for him. I guess you could say the same for Henderson, as well as a couple of others. Jesse Lingard probably hoped for the same. I mean, anything to add to what Stephen said about some of those players?
No, I think Stephen's nailed it with all the players he's mentioned. And yeah, I think just to add with Jesse Lingard, I mean, he got absolute pelters last year from people in the media, i.e. TalkSport, about his move and everything. But when a player doesn't get much of a pre-season, the season to follow is just going to be an uphill battle of playing so many games and keeping yourself fit. And I think ultimately apart from like you see like little bits of decent performances from Jesse, it, for whatever reason, he just couldn't stay fit. And I think first and foremost, I think missing the pre-season had a massive effect on him being a greater influence this season. But from the sidelines, he could have just like stayed in Manchester or whatever, but he was there for every single home game and everything, which he's been brilliant in terms of this team spirit. And for what he's brought to the club as a cheerleader, I think we're going to be miss him on that extent. But yeah, just missing a pre-season is absolutely curtailed his season for what he wanted the season to be.
And Baz, Forrest spent, I think it's 165 million, I think, in transfer fees, obviously more in wages. The fact that we've stayed up justifies that, doesn't it? So actually, in that respect, Lingard on a free, even on big wages, wasn't that big a deal, I guess. But I want to ask you as well, two names on the list that we haven't talked about yet. So firstly, Chris Wood, because from conversations you and I have had on this podcast before, there's a suggestion that Wood was someone that Steve Cooper actually wanted, even though there's that idea that maybe he struggled to fit in a little bit.
Yeah, it's a funny one. So I've seen a couple of things from journalists saying that it was he was a Cooper signing. Part of me's like that. There's, I think back to when I'm sure I've said this on here before. Actually, I think back to when Billy Davis signed Dele Adebola, and I was like, "What the hell are we doing signing him? He's not a Forest style player. We've got no use for him. What's he going to do for us?" And actually, it turned out to be a genius signing because he gave us that presence upfield that would just hold, make the ball stick higher up the pitch when we needed to hold on a little bit. And although Chris Wood's a very different type of player, one, my Newcastle supporting friend says he's very, very good at doing a high press. And obviously this season, we've not had the chance to do a high press. We're going to talk about style of play later, I guess. But if we are playing a high press, then apparently he's very, very good at that. And two, he could probably make the ball stick in when Taiwo's like tired or whatever. So I can see there are benefits to it. He's just not had the chance to show it yet.
And do you think maybe that he, in some ways, he ended up playing more than Cooper would have intended because of Taiwo's injury and the lack of options up front? Because there were times that Wood was in there and he wasn't looking fit, the ball wasn't sticking, he looked like a fish out of water.
Yeah, and he was ending up playing that sort of wide role, which requires lots and lots of movement, and that's not really his game. So I agree with all the tributes to Colback and Jesse Lingard. That video of Jesse Lingard after the Arsenal game just shows the influence he had on the other players. But I'd also like to put a quick tribute into Lyle Taylor, because that Bristol Rovers away game was the turning
Bristol point. Rovers?
A Bristol City, rather. Yeah, yeah.
Away we were game. Lower down in the league than I thought.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but that was the turning point. That was when suddenly we all started to believe that this Forest side, that Steve Cooper was the man.
Well, I was going to ask you to pay tribute to another player who's on that list that we haven't talked about, Cafu. Cafu, who, even though he's had a minimal part to play since Cooper's come in, he had cameo roles in the promotion season, wasn't in the squad at all. But I think you and I think very fondly of him, not just for the fact that he had some ability, but the fact that even when he's not been involved, he's celebrated every moment as if he personally has won the World Cup.
Again, yeah, and again, it's similar to Lingard, isn't it? It's like the players that aren't playing still feel involved and still feel invested and want to be part of it, which is probably testament to Steve Cooper.
Mm. Okay, Stephen, I'm going to come back to you for a player who's staying at the club in terms of his contract situation, but there's all kinds of rumours swirling around about Jonjo Shelvey. So is this on the pitch, off the pitch, a bit of both? What do you think?
It's a bit of both. And if I'm being honest, I don't think we're going to miss Jonjo Shelvey. He's not really contributed much on the pitch other than providing an assist for Bertrand Traoré at Villa Park. And it looks like off the pitch, he's not really settled as a Forest player. And there's been all kinds of speculation over what's been happening with him off the pitch. It looks like he's not in Steve Cooper's plans now. Potentially they've had a disagreement and Cooper's frozen him out, which by the sounds of it, that's on John Joe Shelvey, because I haven't in the, 18 months that Steve Cooper's been here, haven't heard any stories of him falling out with players or having to freeze players out, but it looks like he's had to do that with Shelvey. So somewhere along the line, there's been a disagreement or Shelvey's just not turned up and done his job. And so that's been a final straw.
After that Aston Villa match, you and I were talking and we were saying that the thing that really ground the gears of Forest fans wasn't just that he made a stupid mistake that you'd expect much better from an experienced Premier League player, but the fact that he was turning around trying to blame everyone else. He's trying to blame Niakate, he's trying to blame other people. So I'm assuming that this is down to the fact that he had that attitude where he wasn't being a team player. He was saying, well, it won't me, Gov. And I'm assuming that's what Coops has objected to, Stephen.
Yeah, and one of the great strengths of Cooper's management is that team spirit that he builds at a club. And if somebody comes in and he doesn't ingratiate himself into that, a bit like Shelvey and what he did at Villa Park, then I have no complaints with Cooper wanting to get rid of him. And we just put it down to a signing that's not worked out, and hopefully somebody's going to pick him up and we can move on.
Baz?
Again, knowing a few people who know stuff at Newcastle, apparently one of the reasons Eddie Howe let him go is apparently he's terrible when he's not playing and causes all sorts of disruption. And Eddie Howe wanted to keep him, but when it became apparent what he was like when he wasn't playing regularly, then that's why he decided to let him go.
And I think, you know, we use the fish out of water analogy for Chris Wood. I think big fish in a small pond is possibly one that we can use for Shelvey, or at least what he thinks he is. Tom, is there anything that you want to add to the whole Shelvey affair? Because as far as I could tell, he was the opposition's best player for most of his matches in a red shirt.
If I didn't see John Joe Shelvey in a red shirt again, or a yellow shirt, or whatever away shirt we'll wear for that day, I wouldn't lose any sleep. I think he's been, like Stephen said, and Baz has said, signings don't work out, and ultimately that's what's happened. John Joe Shelvey, I remember seeing him play for Charlton in 2009. It was Billy Davis's first away game, and he was the best player on the park. And I thought that player is going to go far. But when you've got a questionable attitude, i.e., when you're not playing, I mean, it's a bit stupid, really, from him. It's like if the team's playing well and he's not played or whatever, you can't just automatically think he's going to just come into the side when the midfield was getting pretty much settled. So, and that just shows the type of person he is. If you can't see that, then, like the others have mentioned, Steve Cooper hasn't had any problems with any players over the last, even players who probably had no chance of really playing, i.e. Lyle Taylor. He never had a problem with him. John Joe Shelby's been here literally 5 minutes. He's already thrown his toys out the pram. And yeah, like he says, it's one of those signings which haven't worked, and if I didn't see him in a Forest shirt again, I wouldn't be too fussed, to be honest.
And Tom, staying with you, just on a very similar topic of midfielders who don't seem to have worn a red shirt, one of the retained players is Mr. Harry Arter. What would you like to say about that?
I mean, he's had a lot of penalties in the last week, but for all the good what the club's done in the last few years, etc., I think this is on the club, really. They gave him that contract. They put all the terms in for performance-related bonuses, etc. And Harry Arter's never going to see that money again. So I know people were act differently, but when 40 grand's been put in your bank every week or whatever, you're not going to cancel that contract. And people are like saying, oh, why don't they just cancel the contract? Well, you've still got to pay him up, so it's still going to cost you the 40 grand a week for the remainder of the contract. So yeah, like I says, it's a mistake on the club's part, really, because Harry Arter is not going to give up that money anytime soon, is he?
Right. OK, so let's move on, and let's move on to one of my favourite subjects, Mr. Stevie Cooper. I was recently asked to contribute to the Observer's end of season review, and I've posted the details on our social media on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. I'll stick it on TikTok as well. But I couldn't resist sharing a couple of my observations with a wider audience. So regular listeners, you'll know what I'm saying here. So I wrote this. Stevie Cooper is either the greatest con man of all time, or he's a genuinely brilliant coach and a wonderful human being. The owner rightly realised that Cooper is the glue that bound the club and fans together for the last 18 months and stuck by him. Stephen, that goes back to the point that you were making about that Leicester match and the fans, even at 3-0 down, saying, this is the guy that we want.
Yeah, and it is just that connection that we've got with him. It's something special. And the way that he is taken to the club have taken to him back. When you've got something like that, you want to keep hold of it. And I find it very telling in a season where there's been so many managerial changes, particularly at the bottom, the two clubs that have kept faith with their managers, West Ham with David Moyes and Forest with Steve Cooper, we've eventually got out of trouble and stayed up. And that night at Leicester, I'll always look back on fondly because of that moment. I've never seen that kind of backing for a Forest manager when all the signs were pointing to him leaving. 3-0 down away at Leicester. And
would you contrast that to, I think you went to this one, the Chester City 3-0 away match under Megs and Days?
Yeah, that was an absolute nadir, I think. There was whatever hardship we think we've got in the Premier League and how difficult it is, just cast your mind back to Chester, to Oldham on New Year's Day, all those moments under Megs, and we've come a long way since.
But also, doesn't it prove as well that actually, even when the performance, I mean, Leicester was probably the worst performance of the season. And even then, the players, the club, the fans were united behind the manager, as opposed to all of that disjointedness that we saw under so many managers, of which, like you say, the nadir was probably Megson.
Yeah, and it was good to see us buck the trend, because for 20, 25 years, the Forest way has been when things start to go wrong on the pitch, change the manager, because a new manager is going to come in and it'll just change things. But we know, or we should know better than any other club, that chopping and changing managers doesn't work. It doesn't provide stability. And I would argue this season, that bit of stability by keeping hold of Steve Cooper has got us out of trouble. There's an alternative universe out there where we got rid of Cooper after Leicester. We brought in Sean Dyche or Rafa Benitez, we probably had a bit of a bounce and then we sank again, and I could see us getting relegated. Keeping hold of Cooper has done so much for the club on and off the pitch this season.
Well, Forest are magic on and off the pitch, so that would seem to make sense. Tom, what would you like to add?
I was just laughing at going back to the Megson days and every single game was mixing out, wasn't it? Thankfully, those days are long gone. And
that was just from the players, wasn't it?
Yeah, if you speak to certain players of that era. I think keeping Steve Cooper in the job has been the difference, along with the fans, the difference of whether it was staying up or going down this season. I mean, Leeds have been in an absolute tailspin, haven't they, with the managers they've had, and they've ultimately gone. Leicester changed manager, Southampton did the same. And yeah, I think Steve Cooper galvanises this city. He gets it, he knows what the club means to the city and everybody with it. And I just hope that this summer he can build on what he's achieved this season and try and help us to be like a stabilised Premier League club in the years to come.
And Tom, just before we move over to Baz, just very briefly, do you think that Steve Cooper should be in the running for Manager of the Year?
I think from a biased point of view, I'd say yeah. But if you look at what Gary O'Neill has done, because everybody was saying Bournemouth was doomed at the start of the season after that 9-0.
Well, Scott Parker was saying it.
Yeah, exactly. So I think he's done a really good job. Then obviously, Pepe, if he does get the treble this year, it's an unbelievable achievement. But some will say that he should be getting that because of the players he's got at his disposal and all of that. But it's all about having the players at your disposal. It's about going and delivering. And he's done two-thirds of that, hasn't he, as of today. I think he'd be definitely my top three, Steve Cooper, and from a Reds perspective, I'll give it to him because everything what he's had to deal with, no manager's done that. So he's done an absolutely outstanding job.
Baz, I would probably go for Unai Emery as my Premier League manager of the season. He's shown again what happens when you get the right man in position to get that unity and that performance out of players that the previous incumbents couldn't do. So I think there's a parallel there with what Cooper's managed. The other person who I think probably isn't getting enough praise is Thomas Frank. And what I want to say to you, Baz, is that Frank is a great example of what happens when you've got the right manager in charge, but you've also got a club strategy. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, to what Tom was saying, I completely agree about Gary O'Neill. I've always said you can't tell about a manager until they're really, really under pressure. Steve Cooper's been under pressure, and he said in his interviews, it's the first time I've been under pressure. Gary O'Neill's been under incredible pressure, and he's come through it. Arteta's been under incredible pressure, and he's come through it. I don't know if Pep's really had to live with that kind of pressure yet. And Unai Emery hasn't. He's done a great job, but he's not had the fans turn on him or the club hierarchy turn on him yet.
But so he has at other clubs.
Yeah, he has at other clubs. And De Zerbi say he's not had that at Brighton yet. So that's how you tell about someone. I do agree. Thomas Frank's done an absolutely incredible job. And the way that, who was it that was there before?
Dean Smith.
But when they replaced him, I can remember Brentford saying this is going to be our strategy going forwards, and it is exactly right. That's that sort of considered sort of patient approach. Obviously, we talked about it before. It's something that we agree with entirely. Whether Forest have that in place is another matter.
Yeah, and I guess in that case, you know, Steve Cooper also talks about next man up, which sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. But you look at the fact that Brian Mbeumo is basically in position to take over from Ivan Toney while he's suspended. That isn't an accident, is it?
No, it's definitely. I don't particularly like watching Brentford play, but they play to their strengths. He understands his players, he knows what he's doing, and then he's moved them on from that as well, gradually and without wholesale changes, which is impressive. Just the other thing I just have to add is, when Steve Cooper does go, because he's going to go at some point, I'm going to be absolutely heartbroken. And obviously, living in Leeds, I've seen what happens. And we've also seen what happens when you have a manager who dominates your club and keeps everyone together, because that's what happened to us in the 90s. So that's going to be kind of worrying.
So Steve Cooper, simultaneously the new Brian Clough and the new Marcelo Bielsa. I think that's the clip for social media, lads. So, Tom, just very briefly, do you think that the style of play will evolve next season under Cooper?
Yeah, I do, because he had a certain way of playing last season and he's had to change his ideals. If he didn't change that, we would have gone down because we was being opened up at the start of the season, knowing up every single game. And he's had to sacrifice how much possession we have in the game and just be really compact. And as you've seen in recent games, 18% possession, I think it was against Arsenal. And it's not been much more than that in recent games. So I think with this pre-season, I think the players who are going to get in, it's not going to be obviously as much as last year. So it'd be like, I don't know, probably about 6 or 7 to be added to what he's already got. And I think he can really put his mark in the sand, and this is how I want to play. And Gibbs White's mentioned it on a recent YouTube video. He knows that's not the way Steve Cooper wants to play. And I think now we know what the Premier League's like and we've got a really solid spine, I think we will blossom next year of having more of the ball and probably a bit of a high press rather than the low block.
Stephen, just before we move on, Forest played 38 matches, got 38 points, and if I remember rightly, I think they scored 38 goals as well. However, I think the maximum possession we'll have had at any point in the season wouldn't have been any more than 38%. So in line with what Tom said, do you see that being something that Cooper and his coaching staff will want to work on?
Yeah, I think they'll want to have more control in games and adapt their style to have a bit more about them in terms of taking the game to the opposition, being able to control a game by holding on to the ball better. I think one of the great positives of Cooper this season is that he's shown himself to be tactically flexible and open-minded when it comes to how his team plays. It could have been very easy after the losses to Brighton, to Fulham, to Leicester earlier in the season to just stick to his guns and say, it's going to work eventually, lads, stick with it. But he found a way of tightening the team up, picking up points, and we gradually evolved and the style changed, but it worked for our players as much as anything else. So I'm quite excited to see what happens in the summer in terms of the kind of players that Cooper brings in and how he starts to mould this team into a team that can make the push up the table and be a bit more of a side that can take the game to other teams in the Premier League. We've seen so many teams do it, the likes of Brighton, the likes of Bournemouth, Brentford, Fulham, who have had that Premier League experience. I put them in that bracket. They can take the game to teams a bit more. And I think it's time for us now to try and take our style and mould it into that kind of football. Hopefully that's what happens.
Yeah, and again, I think Brentford's a good parallel there in terms of their evolution in 2 years of Premier League football. But we need to leave it there. So thank you for the time being, panel. In a few minutes, we'll be back with some more discussions and a couple of special guests and indeed our Forest quiz. But first, it's time for this.
The 1865 sketch by Jeremy Davis. All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man in his time plays many parts. Shakespeare, it's fair to say, probably didn't have the English Premier League in mind when he wrote those famous lines in As You Like It. But they seem very apt to the state of play as we reach the climax of the 22-23 season. The Premier League is as much about theatre as it is about sport these days, full of play-acting. Witness the extravagant dying swan routines perpetrated this season by the likes of Harry Kane and Bruno Fernandes after receiving the most innocuous of fouls, pantomime booing, especially since the introduction of VAR, subplots such as the short-lived European Super League plan, and this season we even had an interval, what with the World Cup, made to seem all the more like a night at the theatre in that no one could afford an ice cream, thanks to the cost of living crisis. Such has been the welcome rise to prominence of the WSL that all the men and women really are players these days, and such is the tactical sophistication of modern-day football that one man in his time does play many parts, in that the ability to play in different positions is no longer just the preserve of the so-called utility player, such as Phil Neville, Clayton Blackmore, or the underrated Forest legend Ian Bowyer. The fact that Steve Cooper is not front-runner for manager of the season, having pulled off the unlikely feat of keeping Nottingham Forest in the Premier League, as an encore to his truly miraculous feat in getting a ragbag team of local boys and loanees promoted in the first place, just goes to underline the point that the Premier League is a melting pot of great stories. A bit like Pulp Fiction, only with fewer executions. At least if we discount the owners of certain top four clubs. Certainly you can't argue that Marco Silva and Gary O'Neill, to take the two other promoted teams, have been part of remarkable stories this season, whether either of them have contained the number of twists, turns or new characters appearing at short notice is open to question. If the 22-23 Premier League season was put forward for the appraisal of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, the Forest fans would almost definitely win the Oscar for Best Soundtrack, even if Coops missed out on the shortlist for Best Director. Speaking of stories, everyone's gone doolally for the Luton Town story, which may even exceed Forest's own promotion story for sheer underdog makes good value. And of course, with that notorious away end of Kenilworth Road, we're brought back to Shakespeare's reference to entrances and exits. Luton's rise gives hope to Oldham fans, who have seen their own team tumble all the way from the Premier League to non-league since those halcyon days before Mark Hughes broke their hearts and burst their balloon with his late volley in the 1994 FA Cup semi-final. That strike signalled the end of the dream they'd been living since another semi-final in what manager Joe Royal called their pinch-me season in 1990. There has been more than one occasion in the last 2 years when I felt the urge to pinch myself, such has been the remarkable change at Forest. But I haven't done so, and not just because it hurts. Partly because I'm a light sleeper, so the longer it goes on, the more convinced I am that it's not a dream, that this is really happening. And partly because I can never remember my dreams. And I don't want to forget days like Leicester at home or Chelsea away. To quote a different Shakespeare play, if it be this to dream, let me still sleep.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You're listening to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast.
Welcome back to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast, and thank you so much to Jeremy for the latest sketch of the season. Now, still to come, we're going to have another round of Guess That Red, our Nottingham Forest quiz. But in the meantime, I'm really pleased to be joined by a special guest. Now, Ellie Mollison is a Forest supporter and also an ambassador for Her Game Too. Welcome to the podcast, Ellie.
Hello, thank you very much for having me.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. Now, we're going to talk Forest in just a few minutes, but before we do, I'd like you to give me an idea about what is Her Game Too and why is it important in this day and age?
So Her Game Too is essentially a campaign that tackles sexism within sport. It was initially started up as a campaign for football fans because we did notice, well, I say we, the founders at Her Game Too, noticed that there was a gap in terms of campaigns for sexism against female football fans. And from there, it's grown exponentially. It's only been founded 2 years ago. And since then, we've partnered with 68 of the 92, and we've gone international. We've gone into Parliament. We've done some incredible things, and the girls are all volunteers. No one gets paid, not even the founders or directors. And it's just an incredible organisation, and I'm very privileged to be a part of it.
Okay, so talk to me then about how you got involved.
So I got involved just over a year ago, so last April. I saw the campaign from the very beginning. I'm not one of the founders or anything. I just obviously am a football fan and a female. And so soon as they did their initial campaign launch, I saw it. They got something ridiculous number of views. I think it was 1 million views in 24 hours. And I really wanted to be involved with it. So I sent an email, kind of gave my case as to why I should be the Nottingham Forest ambassador, obviously being a massive fan myself, season ticket holder. And then, yeah, they took me on board. And it's been a year of just so many fantastic opportunities. And the girls are incredible and I absolutely love it.
Yeah, and so let's talk about some of those things that you've done, because I think even just the last sort of 8 months has been quite a roller coaster for you, hasn't it? So amongst other things, I've seen you talking about on your social media. So recently you were there for the launch of the Women's World Cup squad. You have been there for the 2 year anniversary for Her Game Too, and unless I'm very much mistaken, you got to travel to the actual Men's World Cup back in December, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I was very, very lucky about that. It was amazing. It wasn't just me or anything like that. 40 fans from each country were sent. And to be sent out, you had to be a fan of the country that you're supporting, obviously, England. And then you have to have done something for the football community. Mm-hmm. So that's why they wanted to have in two representative, and that was me.
Excellent. So, and now I'm Now, feel free to set me straight on this one. Did you have any qualms about going to the World Cup in Qatar, bearing in mind the moral and ethical issues around hosting the World Cup in that country?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from reading you, I mean, I haven't travelled to Qatar. I haven't really left Europe before. So anything I know about Qatar or knew about Qatar was just reading the newspaper articles about the World Cup. And it freaked me out. I very nearly didn't go the day before. I very nearly just backed out because I was scared. I was reading up on laws and things that the news articles in England were saying about the what it was going to be like, how dangerous it was going to be for women. Mm-hmm. And I was very, very scared personally as a woman. Like I said, I can't speak for other communities, for example. I can't imagine how the LGBTQ plus community would have felt. I'm not going to speak for them, but I imagine it would have been a bit scary, scary for them as well. But actually, when I got there, as a female traveling fan, and I think that is very important to make the distinction, because I don't want to speak for the people who live there or other women in that country, but I'm not the only female traveling fan to say it. It was really quite safe. I felt incredibly safe. I didn't have any problems with sexual harassment, sexual assault. I went to bars and nightclubs, which is another thing that we were told didn't exist in Qatar. They do. And didn't have any issues in that way, which I would unfortunately usually get in England at English football matches. I have had problems, and it kind of made me realize that we have normalized a culture in England and thought, well, if you go to a pub, you have to expect that you're going to have a problem with someone. But that's not always the case.
And presumably that goes back to one of the reasons why Her Game 2 exists in the first place, which is that idea that as a woman, you should be free to be able to go to matches without fearing assault or comments or anything that makes you feel unsafe.
Exactly. And I think, for example, I've had an incident quite recently at an away game. I won't name the club because I'm going to give them the opportunity to do something about it before I go name and shame people. Mm-hmm. But I did have an issue at an away game where a group of young lads gestured at me, specifically pointing me out in the crowd to take my top off, which, come on, like, really? And I reported it, didn't get a response for weeks. They promised I'd get a response. I spoke to the health and wellbeing. And then after weeks, I decided to report it through Her Game 2, which is the only time I did eventually get a response, which is why we need Her Game 2. It just showed, without Her Game 2, I would have had no power, no way of reporting it. Well, I did report it, but no way of getting a response. And I think it is really important that women feel like they can be heard. And it's the same for other groups as well, of course, not just women, LGBTQ+, ethnic minorities, a people with disabilities. It's really important that everyone has somewhere that they feel they can go to where they will be heard. And that's where Her Game 2 is coming in for women.
Mm. Okay. Now, time is against us, so I want to talk a bit about Forrest. Who's been your player of the season this season, and what's been your highlight of this season?
I think, for me, my player of the season, I think there are a few highly commended, like Ryan Yates deserves a mention, but unfortunately he did get injured. I have to take that into account, but he's been fantastic. He dropped straight in. But for me, I'm going to have to say Brennan Johnson. Morgan Gibbs-White has been class. Felipe, as we know, has been a brick wall. But I think Brennan Johnson, the attacking threat that he has and the way other teams fear him, you've got to give it to him. In my opinion, Forrest is not Forrest without Brennan Johnson. He's class. He's amazing. And highlight. Oh, that is. It's gonna have to be the Arsenal game. It has to be. Mm-hmm. That was just. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that feeling of, we're staying up officially. I think a lot of people didn't realize it because it was a bit convoluted of that we need this result and this result. But it was, just pure adrenaline, screaming, dancing. Fantastic season.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Ellie Mollison. Thank you for joining us on 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast. And now it's back to the studio.
You're listening to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast.
Thanks to Ellie. And just picking up on what Ellie said there, regular listeners will know that we have a number of contributors to our podcast. And we asked some of them for their player of the season and any personal highlights. Let's have a listen.
Hi, it's Callum. Player of the season, I think, has to be Gibbs White. I did vote for him for player of the season as well. I just think he's too much to ignore. I think Felipe came in and has been just as important since he arrived in January. But I think what Morgan Gibbs-White brings as a whole is incredible. And I think we should build around him. And I think he could be one of our best players for a very long time. And I expect him to put that England shirt on soon after captaining the under-21s. I would say the highlight of the season, I think the obvious one's Arsenal. And it probably is, but I think West Ham at home, first Premier League win for 23 years, the goal, the sound when it went in, the sound at the end of the game, it's pretty much the same as it's been at home all season, if not got better. But that was that kind of first experience of what it was like to be in the Premier League and what it was like to be desperate for a win and then to actually end up getting it. And it was short after all the Lingard abuse as well, so that was kind of sweet. But yeah, it's been a good season.
Hello, it's your old favourite here, the Maradona of the Midlands. For me, the player of the year is Ryan Yates. He's really stepped up to playing in the Premier League and is starting to fulfil the potential he showed in the Championship. His vital importance to the team was plain for all to see when we struggled to pick up hardly any points during the period he was out injured. But it was heartening to see him back in the team towards the end of the season and helped us to secure safety. The memory of the season has to be the Liverpool home match. It was not just the 3 points, but the fact that we beat a superstar-studded Liverpool side. During the years when we were in the Championship, I used to watch teams like Liverpool, and sometimes they looked like they were playing a completely different sport to what we were seeing in the Championship. With superstar players like Mo Salah and Van Dijk, I thought we'd never be able to match them. But to actually beat them, it was a heartening day and something that will live with me for a long time.
Hi, it's Jeremy. My match of the season would be Bournemouth away. Forest went behind again, and obviously after the home defeat to Bournemouth with those late goals had got it in trouble. The equaliser from Sam Surridge was great to see, and actually a pleasant surprise, because I was following on the radio and then an alert pinged through on this very WhatsApp group from Maradona of the Midlands saying Super Sammy Surridge, so I had advance warning of the goal before it went in. Same thing actually happened when Chris Wood scored against City. So thank you to Maradona of the Midlands for keeping me in the loop. And my goal of the season would be Serge Aurier at home to Chelsea, because I was a bit of an Aurier sceptic when he signed and was lamenting the loss of Jed Spence. But I think it's fair to say he has proved me wrong and in spades.
Hello there, it's Mark Dennison here from BBC Radio Nottingham for now, and Forest on a match day as well. Well, what a season. Highlights for me, there are so many. Generally, at home, I would say, I mean, the obvious ones are Man City draw, Arsenal final game, the Southampton game, which is just nuts. I think for me, this might be a bit off the beaten track, but how about the Brighton game at home? Because I just feel that second half, something changed, something clicked, and it was almost the springboard for the remaining games of the season, home and away, actually. It felt like there was a bit more fight from the boys from there on in. So for me, that was probably one of the big highlights, but there are so many, and can't wait for another season in the Premier League, and I hope you enjoy your summer and Euros.
Okay, so thank you very much to our contributors there, to Jeremy, to Callum, to Maradon on the Midlands, and of course to friend of the podcast, Mark Dennison. And Mark, we wish you all the best, but obviously we're very much looking forward to you joining us at the City Ground again next season. So I'm going to ask for a quick fire round. Your player of the year, your goal of the year, your season highlight. Well, we've already done season highlights. So your player of the year, your goal of the year, and your favourite chant of the year. So quick fire, Baz.
Player of the year, Gibbs White by default, because he's the only one that played all season. Goal of the year, I think Brennan against Leeds, the technique was absolutely perfect. And chant of the year, there's been, I think, Forrester Magic kept us in the league, but the Danilo one is the one that keeps going around my head.
What, you go for that one? Okay, Stephen.
Player of the season, Morgan Gibbs-White. He's been incredible for us and proven people wrong, most notably 30 miles down the road at Molineux, which has been nice. The goal of the season for me, Danilo against Southampton, Gibbs-White's flick to set it up and the finish. And I love Danilo's goal celebration, so anytime he scores, I'm happy. And the best chant for me, the Waka Waka chant at Crystal Palace. I wasn't at Selhurst Park. I couldn't get tickets, but the chant has been in my head all week. It's, whoever came up with that, it was a moment of genius.
And Tom?
Player of the season, it has to be Morgan Gibbs-White over a consistent run. He's been brilliant. Not discounting what Brennan Johnson did earlier in the season with his goals. And then in the last 2 months or so, Tower One has been brilliant. And I think his goals has been a major factor of keeping us in the league. But on a consistent basis, Morgan Gibbs-White's my player of the season. Goal of the season is the goal against Manchester City. To do that against the team, we basically did, a Man City to Manchester City, what they do with the football. And I think every player had a say in that goal. And I mean, Chris Wood, he couldn't really miss, really. But to do that against them was just a brilliant goal. And I couldn't take it in at the time because you're like, it's just a pass across the back and everything. And you're thinking, then you turn to somebody and you say something, then you miss like a couple of passes. But then to look back at it, it's been brilliant. So that was my goal of the season and chant of the season. Same as what Stephen's just said, Waka Waka. And to do that going from station to station in South London last week, it was brilliant. And seeing all the tourists that filmers, it was like being on a at a premiere or something like that with all the tourists there on the mobile phones. So yeah, I'd say the Waka Waka song last week.
Okay, so we can say that the 1865 player of the season is Morgan Gibbs-White. Congratulations to Morgan. For what it's worth, I would have gone for Ryan Yates as well, for the same reasons as Maradon in the Midlands. Goal of the year, obviously we've got a few different ones selected. I think in that case, I'm going to get the casting vote. So I'm going to go for Danilo against Southampton. So congratulations, Danilo. Oh, and and yeah, favourite chant. Oh, it's so tricky, but Waka Waka. And again, I wasn't at the game, but what I would say is seeing the players dancing with the fans like that is, apart from the fact it's a great chant, it's an original chant, and then seeing the players really enjoying that, even though it's a little bit of a fruity chant, that's something that will stick in my mind. So that's the 1865 chant of the year. Just Tom, as you're the one of our podcast team, and Stephen, you've been to a few away matches, but Tom's the one, along with Adam, who's been to the most. Tell me about your favourite and least favourite away experiences.
So my favourite away, two favourite away experiences. Selhurst Park for the atmosphere and being in a bit of an old school stadium, then witnessing the only away win of the season at Southampton just over New Year. That was a pretty decent experience to go to because I can actually say I was there. Worst away ground of the season, atmosphere-wise, Brentford. I just don't get it where this says, oh, it's really atmospheric, and we was right on the segregation and their fans did absolutely nothing until they scored the two goals late on. But West Ham's London Stadium, that is not a football stadium. It's a glorified, Athletic Stadium and how they've tried to make it a football stadium. It's just weird where you've got the lower tier, then you've got like a huge platform. I've never seen anything like it. Then you've got the upper tier, which seems to be like a completely different postcode to the rest of the ground. And I think West Ham sold the soul leaving Upton Park. And yeah, West Ham's grounds is probably the worst stadium I've been to in a very long time, because it's not a football stadium.
And just something that Stephen alluded to, and I alluded to in that Observer piece as well. Are we all in agreement? The 1865 award for the worst opposition fans has to go to Wolves. They're salty, they're mardy, they can give it, but they can't take it. And also, all I'm just going to say to them is enjoy your 35 million, because we'll happily have Morgan in exchange. Yeah, Tom.
I've mentioned it before. I absolutely don't get it. So, Morgan Gibbs-White, he's from Stafford. He's been at the club since, I presume, the age of 10. He's come up the age ranks. He doesn't owe Wolves anything, because in terms of he's graduated, they've got 35 plus million. From my knowledge, he never asked to leave Wolves. It was just like he's just waiting for the two clubs to agree the fees, so he let him go to Forest. However, Willy Bolly, which he openly said, I do not want to play for Wolves. He didn't turn up for training. And then when we played him in the cup, he was applauded. That just baffled me, that did. And like you just said, you see him on Twitter at the moment, but they've got an extra 5 million for us staying up. And I mean, I've never known a fan base to be so ungrateful. You know what I mean? So yeah, they're just the mardiest, saltiest fans I've ever come across. And I think they've taken, if you compare them to Derby, I don't think Derby have been that bad. So, yeah, Wolves are just...
Tom,
embarrassing.
Take a breath. Baz wants to say something.
The only away game I went to this season was at Old Trafford, and the Manchester United fans were awful there. But I have to say, they were brilliant every time they came to ours, the noise they made and whatever. But I also want to say an honourable mention to Brighton for their Champions of Sussex, You'll Never Sing That chant, which was absolute genius.
And absolutely true. So thank you very much, panel. Now it's time for this.
1865. Guess That Red.
Yes, yes, yes. It's the return of Guess That Red, which has taken a break for a few months. But now Tom is going to ask us five questions about a Forest player, past or present. And us as the panel will have to shout out and see if we can guess who it is. So do play along at home, won't you? And over to you, Tom.
Right, so the questions for Guess That Red this week are, so question one is, I was born in Perez Zeledon.
Is that even a place?
Yes, it's a place. No. Oh,
not a clue.
Right, I'll move on. My surname, is Gamboa.
Oh, it's on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah.
Right, Rich. Question. Go on.
Is it Hildeberto Pereira?
No, it isn't.
That was a stab in the dark. Okay, keep going.
So, question three. I've represented my country at 3 World Cups.
Stephen.
Go on.
Gonzalo Jara?
No.
Rich.
Go on.
Keylor Navas.
It is Keylor Navas.
Yay!
So, the other two questions would have been, I started my career at Saprissa in Costa Rica.
And never heard of them either.
And I've got 110 caps for my country.
Nuestro portero, Keylor. Gracias.
Your last one should have been, he's won more than you.
Yeah.
I think we've got another moment for social media there. Okay, so thank you very much, Tom, and thank you everyone. Thank you to today's panel, Tom, Stephen and Baz. Thank you to Jeremy for the sketch, and thank you as well to our special guests Mark Dennison and Ellie Mollison. Thank you also to Callum and Marriage on the Midlands for contributing, and Adam, even though he was busy and couldn't contribute this weekend. Our other contributors this season include Amilcar, Zigazaga Pete, our guest match reporter George Edwards, and all of the opposition fans who've kindly contributed to our match reports throughout the season. We also have a special mention for our canine producers, Romeo and Winston, and the 1865 podcast for her regular contributions. We'd also like to thank FanHub for rewarding match-going supporters. You'll have seen us mention them on our social media feeds. We also would like to say thank you to our new friends at Football Prizes for providing Forest supporters with the chance to win signed goodies via our social media. And of course, to the Sports Social Podcast Network for providing us with support and keeping us on the air. Most of all, thank you, listener, for joining us throughout the season, a memorable season. What a year it's been, ups, downs and everything in between. And thank you for your comments on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube and TikTok. If you like what you hear, please do share our podcast in the usual ways or leave us a review. And we'll be back very soon with a special podcast celebrating one of our miracle men, which will be in your feed very soon. Until then, from me, Rich Ferraro, and the entire 1865 team, do look after yourselves and each other.
Podcast Network.